Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. So begins one of the most beloved hymns of all times, a staple in the hymnals of many denominations, New Britain. The author of the words was John Newton. Many of you know a little bit of his story, but I'm going to tell you a little more of his story this evening. Newton was born in London, July 24, 1725, the son of the commander of a merchant ship which sailed the Mediterranean. When he was 11, he went to sea with his father and made six voyages with him before his father retired. He was press ganged into service, which means, for those of you who aren't aware, press ganged is when they come around and they basically throw you in the back of a cart and you're going to serve your military service right now. That's not just a tradition of old. They still do that in a lot of countries today, like in Turkey, where I lived for a year. They will still do that at times. If every young man in Turkey is required to give 2 years to the military, and if enlistments are down, they won't hesitate to go out and raise enlistments. But he was pressed into service. Finding conditions on board intolerable, he deserted, but was soon recaptured and publicly flogged and demoted from midshipman to common seaman. Basically, through several more steps, he went to work for a friend of his father's, who was also a captain, and with the help of this friend of his father's, he got his own ship and entered into the slave trade. One thing that was a little bit different about him, it says that, you know, although he had some early religious instruction from his mother, who died when he was a child, he had given up religious convictions, but he always remembered what his mother had taught him about the Bible. And I was telling Pastor Steve today, one thing I was reading basically said that one of the justifications for slavery back in those days was that it was in the Bible. It was talked about in the Bible. It was okay in the Bible. But one rule in the Bible was that you were to treat your slaves lovingly and mercifully. And so he always tried to do that. Even so, conditions were abominable. On a homeward voyage, while he was attempting to steer the ship through a violent storm, he experienced what he was to refer to later as his great deliverance. He recorded in his journal that when all seemed lost and the ship would surely sink, he exclaimed, "Lord, have mercy upon us." Later in his cabin, he reflected on what he had said and began to believe that God had addressed him through the storm and that grace had begun to work for him. For the rest of his life, he observed the anniversary of May 10, 1748 as the day of his conversion, a day of humiliation in which he subjected his will to a higher power. It wasn't much longer that he was able to captain the slave ship. There is a common myth that during that storm he turned around, went back to Africa, and set all his slaves free. He didn't do that. For one thing, slave ship captains weren't, they didn't own the slaves. They were transporting the slaves, so they weren't his to set free. So, but he did get out of it. I turned the page too quick. In 1750, he married Mary Catlett, with whom he had been in love for many years. Because of a serious illness, he gave up seafaring forever. From 1755 to 1760, he was a surveyor of tides at Liverpool, where he came to know George Whitefield, deacon in the Church of England, an evangelistic preacher and leader of the Calvinistic Methodist Church. Newton became Whitefield's enthusiastic disciple. During this time period, Newton also met and came to admire John Wesley, founder of Methodism. He learned Greek and Hebrew through self-education. He became a minister and applied to the Archbishop of York for ordination, and although he never went to college, he was ordained in the Church of England, and in that movie clip, he was the one mopping the floor. That was who was represented. The well-dressed gentleman in that clip was, and I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Wilberforce. Is it William Wilberforce? Wilberforce was a, pun intended, force for abolition in England. And he had been in Newton's congregation as a boy. Newton was so popular as a preacher that they had to expand his church a few times because the congregations grew so large. But he never lost his conviction. And when Wilberforce grew up, the abolition movement was growing in England, and he was basically called upon to lead it. And so he went back to his former minister and asked for direction. If you want to know the whole story, every good show is interrupted with a commercial, right? I've spoken to Pastor Steve, and one nice thing about this movie, the movie is called Amazing Grace, and it was produced by a religious organization, even though it has some top box office stars in it. And it comes with a license to show it for free to any organization you want to show it to. So this next Tuesday, on All Saints Day at 7 o'clock, we will be showing the entire movie. It's about an hour and a half. But it is a very, very good movie, very moving. Some interesting facts about Amazing Grace. It has been recorded over 1,100 times. It's one of the top three recorded songs in history. One thing, the verses have changed throughout time. And in fact, the melody obviously isn't what, there wasn't really a melody when he first wrote it. But the melody was added later. One of our most common verses of today and I won't be able to remember which one it is. Through many dangers, no, that's not it. When we've been here 10,000 years. Can anyone tell me who added that? $5. Anybody can tell me who added that? That was included, that was written and added by Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author of Uncle Tom's Cabin. So it's, as Jerry said, it's very much one of the foundations of Christianity. And don't tell Jerry that it's not a coincidence. I actually didn't have a subject until we decided on Amazing Grace, and everything kind of fell into place from there. But we'll let him believe that it was an amazing coincidence. Oh, okay. No, you're not. I can't see you. But I've got one or two other clips, and then basically we'll be done with the talk. I wanted to keep it short. But it is, I don't know, think about your life and think about the times that you've heard that song. Reflect on that while we're playing these clips. And then afterwards we're going to sing the six original verses. We'll have time. I kept the talk short. And one little tidbit of my own or personal testimony, and I hope somebody isn't about to drive through the doors. There's like a truck sitting outside with lights shining the doors. But if I jump out of the way, you'll know why. My granddaughter, Kesley, you know, she's four now. And when she was a baby, I would love to rock her. And her mother, I used to love to rock her. And Patty used to get kind of frustrated because a lot of times Jen would get extremely agitated. And for some reason I had, it seemed like, a little better ability to calm her. And Patty being a new mother, that just, she didn't like that. But with both of them, and with my daughter Melissa, the song that I would most often hum or sing while I was rocking them was Amazing Grace. And with Kesley, it was very amazing to me because that was basically the only song I would use with her. And about a year ago when she was three, she was just sitting in my lap and it was nap time and she didn't want to take a nap. And I mean, oh, I'm too big to take a nap. So I just started rocking her and started humming that song. And pretty soon, so I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Maybe we shouldn't sing it in church. Everybody will nod off, but... But anyway, I've got one or two more clips, and then we'll move on with the service. But I would encourage you to come Tuesday. I think you'll enjoy it. Maybe we could even talk Pastor Steve into letting us bring popcorn into the sanctuary or something.